Kanda giri govardhan ki jai.
Vrindavan dhamma ki jai.
Mathura dhamma ki jai. Navadvi Mayapur dhamma ki jai. Dharmapuri dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveda Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivase Sisanivani Paskatyapi Satyapi. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamalam Sri Guru Nivashanavashta. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Radita Shri Vishakam Vidamscha Panchakalpa Trupishcha Kipasana Vyogata Patitanam Pavane Vyogashna Vyogamori Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. February 22nd, 2019, in Mayapur, India, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 14, King Pururava, enchanted by Urvasi, Text 46. Tasya nirmanta jajjato. Jata Veda Vivagasu Trayasa Vidjaya Rajna Utratve Kalpitas Trivit Tasya of Pururava Nirmantanat, because of interaction, Jataha was born. Jatavedaha meant for material enjoyment according to the Vedic principles. Vivavasu, a fire. Traya, following the Vedic principles. Staha, the fire. Vijaya, by such a process. Ragna, by the king. Putratve, a son's being born. Kalpitaha, it so became. Trivit, the three letters A, U, Om combined together as Om. Srila Prabhupada translation and purport. From Pururava's rubbing of the Aranis came a fire. By such a fire, one can achieve all success in material enjoyment and be purified in seminal birth, initiation, and in the performance of sacrifice, which are invoked with the combined letters A, U, M. Thus the fire was considered the son of King Pururava. Purport. According to the Vedic process, one can get a son through semen, shukra. One can get a bona fide disciple through initiation, savitra. Or one can get a son or disciple through the fire of sacrifice, yajna. Thus, when Maharaj Pururava generated the fire by rubbing the aranis, the fire became his son. Either by semen, by initiation, or by yajna, one may get a son. The Vedic mantra Omkara, or pranava, consisting of the letters A, U, M, can call each of these three methods into existence. What are the three methods? Therefore, the words Nirmanta Jajjataha indicate that by the rubbing of the Aranis, a son was born. Tasya Nirmanta Jajjato Jata Veda Bivabasuhu Trayasa Vijaya Rajna Putratre Kalpitastravit. From Pururava's rubbing of the Aranis came a fire. By such a fire, one can achieve all success in material enjoyment and be purified in seminal birth, initiation, and in the performance of sacrifice, which are invoked with the combined letters A-U-M. Thus, the fire was considered the son of King Pururava. So there's a lot of emphasis in the Bhagavatam and the Puranas on having a son, isn't there? Have you noticed this? A lot, you know, I think in our modern society, we may be a little bewildered by this. These people go to great lengths to have a son. So why is that? Why are they so interested? And here we have the three methods. What were the three methods again? So by body, to have biological children, initiation, and through yajna. And all of these are ways of continuing a succession. Now here, Pururava is interested in something mundane and having a mundane relationship with Urvasi. But the principle of continuing a succession is very prominent in the Shastras. So why is that, and what in the world does it have to do with us? Well, this has to do with maintenance. And maintenance is in the mode of
goodness.
Yes, it's very easy to create something and then let it fall apart. Yes? And it's very easy to destroy something. If you ever had a little brother or sister, I'm sure you experienced how easy it was for things to be destroyed. Right? You would make something with your toys and they would come along and just finish it. So destruction is very easy, creation a little bit harder, but the most difficult thing to do is maintenance. Now, of course, each of us is interested in maintaining our own spiritual life, yes? Right? We don't want to just, yes, I'm going to take initiation and I'm going to do it, and then 2 years later we can't chant our rounds and we're not following the principles and we're waking up at 10:30 in the morning and, you know, going to the movies. And we want something that we're going to be able to maintain personally, yes? How long are we hoping to maintain our Krishna consciousness? Forever. Yes. But we're also interested, I hope, in maintaining our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Yes? Who here would like the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to be maintained and thrive? Okay, if you're not interested, this class will probably not be of very much interest to you. Because I'd like to focus today on the maintenance of the mission, of Prabhupada's mission, which of course is connected to the maintenance of our own spiritual life. We're not going to be able to maintain the society and have the society continue if we can't continue in our own spiritual life, because the society is made up of us, yes? Whenever we say, why doesn't ISKCON do this, or why doesn't ISKCON do that, I always wonder, who is this ISKCON? I think it's in my mirror, yeah? ISKCON is made up of us. But we're going to focus here on this mood of succession. Why? Because Pururava is a king. So he's not just interested in the maintenance of his own personal dynasty. That's not his focus. He's not just like some, you know, rabbit who wants to have more rabbits and more rabbits and more rabbits. His interest in succession is in taking care of his responsibilities, in taking care of his kingdom. Yes? So can you think of some other Bhagavatam stories where people were really interested in having a son or having a succession? Maharaj Prikit, yes, with the Pandavas. And who was interested in stopping that succession? Ashvatthama. He wanted to make sure there was no one to continue the righteous reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And that was very important. I mean, Krishna thought it was important enough to go into the womb of Uttara and to preserve Pariket. Some other story in the Bhagavatam.
King Chitraketu.
King Chitraketu, right? He married a lot of women. I don't think it was the women's problem. I think it was his problem. Yeah, you've got that many wives, it's probably your problem. So he had this desire, again, not just to enjoy some little child walking around. That wasn't his thought. His thought is, how will my kingdom go on? Of course, that didn't work out too well for him. Some other story. Oh, yes. With Satyavati. So Satyavati had two children, right? Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, and they died without an heir. And so she wanted to make sure that the family dynasty could go on. And then we have the whole intrigue of the Mahabharata and the story of the Pandavas comes from this need of Satyavati to continue the succession, to continue the kingdom. Some other stories.
King Dasarath.
King Dasarath, yes, who did a yajna, yes.
King
Uttanapat, okay, yes. Prithu Maharaj, yes. Now that story is very interesting because we have Anga who had no child and he did this yajna to get a child. Unfortunately, he got a bad child. We also have this happen in the Bhagavatam, yes? There's a number of instances where the person who should be continuing is not qualified. Many, many stories about how qualification is not just by birth. And then the sages were so much interested in succession, right? They had the body of Vena preserved and churned to produce Prithu Maharaj. Some other examples. Daksha. Right? We have actually all the Prajapatis. Brahma's very interested in this. He wasn't very happy when the four Kumaras said, no, we're not participating in this program. Right? So the Prajapatis, that's their business, is to produce not just population, but good population. And also we see not just with biological sons, we see with Vyasadeva, who was interested in having disciples to whom he could give the Vedic knowledge and who would go on disseminating the Vedic knowledge. Isn't it? Yes? Because a Krishna is interested in succession. Krishna is interested in longevity. Krishna is interested in maintenance, right? Evam pram pra prapto imam raja sayobidu sakale nehemata yoganasta parantapa. He is giving this knowledge in disciplic succession. He wants to see that it goes on. Right? Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharatya vyutinam ti dharmasya tidatmanam srujamyaham. Whenever dharma becomes adharma, and how fast does dharma become adharma? Pretty fast, right? It's like how long does it take for your room to get dirty? Not very long time, very quickly. So succession is not just in having a person, but it's maintaining the dharma, isn't it? Yes? Having the right people trained, maintaining the dharma, and it has to be done over and over and over and over again. Right? And this happens always. Has this problems happened in our Gaudiya Sampradaya? Have things had to be restored? Yes. Like during Bhaktivinoda's time, things had degenerated. People were associating Gaudiya Vaishnavism with Sahajiism. And he had to restore it. And this happens frequently, very quickly. I mean, in almost any religious system, things degrade into something material. Isn't that a fact? Right? And in every religious system, somebody has to come again and revive it. If you study, right, I used to teach the sociology of religion. If you study any religious system, you'll see that maintenance is very difficult. It's very difficult. People immediately start perverting things. They turn it to something mundane. Isn't that a fact? Right? Like Jesus said, one who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And you find so many Christians today, their whole emphasis is on family values. Right? They've switched it. How to become a nice, happy person in the world and go to heaven and enjoy with your family in heaven. Right? When we met Prabhupada in 1974, and my father asked Srila Prabhupada, can I come to the temple if I have my own religion? And Prabhupada said, yes, there can be many religions, just like we are in Chicago. So many planes can be flying to Chicago, but they have to know that they are going to Chicago. Or what is the meaning of many planes? He said, so if your religion knows that you want to know God and love Him, then it is acceptable. But if you don't know you're trying to know God and love Him, then what is the meaning of many religions? And generally, in a religion, things start being about the rituals How are you doing the rituals? Are you waving the incense 5 times or 7 times? And are you going from left to right or right to left? It starts being about that kind of thing, and it starts being about details of theological dharma, right? And dogma. And do you believe this or this? Do you believe Lakshmi is a jiva? Do you believe Lakshmi is actually Shakti Tattva? And there'll be a whole split, right, in the religion, and there'll be 2 different camps. And they'll be fighting about this, and they lose sight about love of God. If you really think about it, when Prabhupada would say you can attain love of God as a Christian, and their rituals and their theology differs from ours, and yet if the essence is there, then one can still attain love of God. And yet we end up fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting over details of theological belief and details of ritual. Or we become materialistic and say, well, you know, if you worship the deity, then you're going to enjoy in heaven, or then you're going to get liberated, and that kind of thing. And we lose the whole transcendence. So it may appear that things are being maintained. It may look like it. Like when St. Francis of Assisi challenged the Roman Catholic Church. So the Roman Catholic Church was still going on ostensibly. Right? But he came and he said, where's the teachings of Jesus? And he said it very politely, and he said it very humbly. And even the Pope was shocked, and he said, you're right. He said, with all of our finery and our opulence, we have lost the actual essence of our teaching. So it's not just having something go on technically, but it's having something go on with purity. It's having something go on so that anyone who contacts it becomes purified. Like Prabhupada said, if you just touch the books with appreciation, you get benefit. You just eat a little prasadam, you get benefit. You just contact one of the devotees, you get benefit. So that means that it's being maintained not just in terms of buildings and money, and which is all certainly important, but it's also maintained in terms of the essence. And Krishna is very concerned about this. So this concern to have things go on is actually, interestingly enough, also part of even good business practice in the world. So my own educational study is both in education and in leadership. So I keep up with my field both in terms of education and in terms of leadership, organizational culture, organizational structure, and so forth. And one of the classic books about organizations is called Good to Great, where there was research done to analyze what companies not only continued, but prospered, and went from being a good company to a great company. And the analysis was done particularly of the leadership. And one of the aspects of leadership that contributed to a company not only maintaining, but prospering, was where the leader of the company was more interested in the company and the mission of the company than in his, generally it would be his, own ego. That there were often very many successful companies that were a personality cult, that were based around the enthusiasm and the intelligence and the drive of a particular person. And as soon as that person died, or as soon as that person retired, the company slowly or quickly fell apart. But the companies that prospered over time were those in which the leaders put the mission and the vision of the company over his own ego. So if we want the ISKCON movement to continue, we need to also do our service in that mood, without ego, as Krishna very nicely explains in Bhagavad Gita 3:30, to work without ego and without lethargy. In fact, of course, everything should be done like that. Yagnartat kamanam mantra loko yam karma bandhana taratam karma kamataya mukti sangha samachara. So what we should be doing in ISKCON should be to promote the mission and to promote the purity and to promote it in a way that will outlive us. To promote it in a way that it's likely to continue. That we will have, in effect, one of these or more of these 3 kinds of children. So, of course, we see Srila Prabhupada himself set this example. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that the Hare Krishna movement not be a personality cult centered upon him. Therefore, in 1970, think about this, 1970, Srila Prabhupada started the movement when? 66. So 1970, the very senior devotees had been in the movement for how long?
5 years.
Right. I remember when I got married in 1973, I had just joined, and the TEL president was urging me to marry this one devotee who very much wanted to marry me. And I was being urged by the other devotees, yes, you should marry him because you're getting such an opportunity to marry a senior devotee, which meant he'd been in the movement for 3 years. So, you know, when Prabhupada started the GBC in 1970, he was working with people who'd been in the movement maybe, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And how old do you think most of them were? Do you think any of them were over 30? No, they were all in their 20s. So people who were in their 20s, who'd been chanting Hare Krishna maybe for a year or two. And what were most of these people doing before chanting Hare Krishna? Were they being born in really like pukka, Brahmin Vaishnav families where they'd been, you know, hearing mantras from the womb? I assume, how many of you have read Chasing Rhinos with the Swami? How many of you have read that book? Oh my, if you, oh please, do yourself a favor and read that book. But don't start it at 9 at night. So you get some, I mean, that was perhaps a little extreme, his story, but you can get some idea of what was the background, not of everyone, but what was the background of many of these devotees. And I know Devan Rita Swami told me that many times when you make devotees, it takes 5 years just for their mind to function. You know? Prabhupada was making devotees primarily, not entirely, but primarily from the counterculture, which was also called the hippies or the freaks. So they were very much into a culture of intoxication and illicit sex. Of course, most of them were meat eaters. So just chanting Hare Krishna for a year or two, and, you know, 23 years old, and Prabhupada's having them run the movement. By the way, even now in 2019, we still have some problems in our ISKCON movement because of that. So because of some of the spiritually and materially immature ways those first leaders did things in ISKCON, and they trained so many people, so we still have some residual difficulty from that. So why did Srila Prabhupada do that? Why did Srila Prabhupada turn over the management of his very young, very small society to people who, by almost any estimation, were not particularly qualified to run his society? And I'm sure that all of those people would wholeheartedly agree with that statement. It's not a criticism. Because he was looking at longevity. He was looking at maintenance. He was looking at succession. He knew that if the whole society were highly dependent on his personal hand involved in everything, then the chances were that as soon as he left this planet, everything would simply stop. You know, there's only a handful of religious systems that make it past 100 years. A tiny, tiny fraction that get past 100,000 followers and 100 years. Most just, you know, like a firefly, start with the founder and then stop. But Srila Prabhupada very much, first of all, he put Krishna in the center, didn't he? Right? People were, we weren't known as Prabhupada's movement. We were known as the Hare Krishnas. Again, why did he do that? It had a lot to do with succession. It had a lot to do with longevity. And then Srila Prabhupada separating the management of the BBT from the GBC was also something that Prabhupada specifically said had to do with longevity and maintenance. That way, if one failed, the other would be there. If one failed, it wouldn't pull down the other. He was thinking from the beginning, how are things going to go on? And he would warn us over and over again, if you make the deity worship ritualistic, you'll ruin the whole thing. Right? Anybody know what else Prabhupada said if we did would ruin the whole thing?
Gossip.
Hmm?
Gossip.
Gossip?
Stop.
Huh?
Micromanage?
Well, specifically centralization and bureaucracy. He said if we have centralization and bureaucracy, you'll ruin the whole thing with something else. Not cooperating, you'll ruin the whole thing.
Huh?
Not preaching. We stop preaching. We just simply show the deity and collect money and sit around and eat and sleep. Yes.
Compromising,
yes. Not following the principles. If we stop waking up early and following the principles of bhakti, we would spoil the whole thing. Personal ambition. He said the poison of personal ambition. So Prabhupada warned us there were things that we could do that would ruin his mission. Yes? And he didn't say to us, oh, whatever you do, everything will just go on, doesn't matter. He was saying Mahaprabhu's movement will go on, but if you want this institution to go on, then there's things that you need to do for succession. It was something that Srila Prabhupada was very concerned about. So establishing the GBC, putting Krishna at the center, separating management of the BBT and the GBC, also Shastra training. Prabhupada wanted these degrees in Shastra training, also as a kind of succession. In fact, he even talked about giving a name, right, to the one of the degrees as the Bhaktivedanta name. And if you read that letter, he says, in this way the name will go on through the generations. Prabhupada was looking at succession. And he was looking at succession in Shastric knowledge. You know, when Prabhupada started the movement, the devotees didn't know anything about the Shastra, right? As that famous story, I heard it directly from Tom Hopkins in Harvard 2016. He had a conference for ISKCON's 50th anniversary. So Tom Hopkins, a very interesting professor, he had done his PhD dissertation, his PhD thesis on the Bhagavatam before Prabhupada came to America. And he was saying that when he did his thesis, that there was only one English translation available of the Bhagavatam. He said there were apparently two, but the second was a plagiarism of the first. So there was really only one translation. And he said to his knowledge there was only, I think, two or three printed copies of this English translation of the Bhagavatam in the whole United States. So one of his students came to him, he was a professor in Pennsylvania, and showed him the article about Srila Prabhupada preaching in New York. So he said he got a travel stipend from his university, and he traveled to New York City and went to 26 Second Avenue to Matchless Gifts to see what was going on. So outside Matchless Gifts, there's a table, and on the table are books, and what books are there? The Bhagavatam. Which Bhagavatams? The first canto, those three volumes that Prabhupada brought in his trunk. Right, so they're on the table, and there's this young man behind the table selling the books. So Professor Hopkins says to him, what books are these? And he says, I don't know, I think it's the Bhagavad Gita. So Professor Hopkins looks at it, he says, this is the Bhagavatam. I don't know, I guess so. And he said, who translated this? He's looking at it and saying, it's a different translation in English. Who translated this? And the devotee says, oh, Swamiji. Who's this Swamiji? I don't know, we just call him Swamiji. And Professor Hopkins says, where is he from? And the devotee says, ah, he's from India. And Professor Hopkins said, what part? And the young man said, India has parts? So Professor Hopkins decided that at that point he would not bother asking whether or not these books had anything to do with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because that was going to be his next question. And he decided there was no point in even asking the question. So that was originally the level of Shastric knowledge that the devotees had. If you read in Chasing Rhinos with the Swami, and Prabhupada was asking Shyama Sundar to ask George Harrison for $19,000 to publish the Krishna book, and Shyama Sundar was writing that he couldn't understand why Prabhupada wanted to publish this book of stories that all just seemed like fantastic fairy tales to him. And he was already initiated. You know, he'd already been a devotee for, I think, probably 2 years at that point. And he just couldn't understand, you know, why is Prabhupada interested in these stories in Krishna book. So this was the level of Shastric knowledge with which Srila Prabhupada had to contend. I mean, I remember it took me 2 years before I could understand who these personalities were, you know, Pandu and Dhritarashtra and Vyasadeva, right? I didn't grow up in an atmosphere where I knew about David and Goliath and Daniel, but I didn't know these personalities. So Srila Prabhupada wanted in-depth Shastric study so that as people joined the movement, they would actually be trained thoroughly in the Shastras. And he was always pushing the books, the books, the books, the books, the books, right? To distribute the books, to read the books. So these were some of the ways, I'm sure we could think of many more, in which Srila Prabhupada really emphasized succession, not just in an external form, but in a deep form. All right, what can we do? What can we do? Right? Everybody said they were interested in this, yes?
Yes.
We like that during our life, ISKCON goes on and prospers. Yes?
Yes?
At least for people like me, I'm hoping it prospers because I figure that it's only going to be a few years before I'm one of the kids running around in one of the schools here. So I kind of like there to be a school and be a community so I have some place to take birth in. So what can we do? So there's a good hint given here in this verse that there's three ways to continue a succession, which is connected to the three letters that make up the pranava om, the a, u, and um. When you put a, u, a, u, a, u, it becomes o. So here it said biologically, through discipleship, and through fire, through yajna. So let's start with yajna. So our yajna, of course, is the Sankirtan yajna. And just like you get initiated Vedically into a yajna, so our initiation into the Sankirtan yajna is our Harinam initiation. Yes? Our Sankirtan yajna is based on Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So if we're going to perpetuate this movement through yajna, that means chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. That means we are self-chanting minimum 16 rounds with attention. With attention. We have one little book over there if you're interested after the class on how to chant without offense. So how to chant with attention, with love, with prema. I've asked many devotees, what's the highest expression of our japa? If we were to say, you know, we vow to chant 16 rounds, so what's the lowest level of chanting? That would be like you're just moving your fingers over the beads and saying the words and, I don't know, watching TV at the same time. And I said, then what's the highest expression? And they said, oh, to get all your rounds done by 7 in the morning. I'm like, no. To chant Shudanam with prema. To actually realize that Krishna and his energy are dancing on our tongue. Bhaktivinoda talks about how the name manifests in the heart and it goes into the ears and it goes and it dances on our tongue. And just like Krishna says, in Sattvagun, all the gates of the body are illumined with knowledge. So if we are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra properly, actually all the gates of our gross body, all the aspects of our subtle body and our self, the soul, is saturated with this dancing of the Lord and his internal energy. So that Krishna and his eternal energy are dancing in our soul, in our mind, and even on our gross body. And that's Hare Krishna mantra should reveal to us, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, our eternal form and our eternal service, and allow us to enter into that atmosphere. So we should be aiming for that level of chanting in our japa and in our kirtan. Participating in the kirtan, again, with focus, with attention. Not just going to the kirtan and moving our mouth while we say hello to all of our friends we haven't seen for the last couple of years. Right? That's a big problem in a place like this. Right? You go to the kirtan, and in the middle of kirtan, all of your old friends walk up to you and say hello. But to be absorbed in the kirtan, to lead the kirtan, to respond to the kirtan, to be propagating the kirtan. And then also in our Gayatri Mantra, right? Here specifically talking about the Omkara, to be meditating on the Gayatri Mantra And not just as Prabhupada, not just om bu bu ba and saying, just mumbling something, but actually what does it mean? Right? To be enlivened, to be enlightened, to have our consciousness expanded with knowledge, to be offering respect to our guru, to want to be enlivened in Krishna consciousness like our guru is enlivened, to want to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the maintainer of the universe, to be absorbed in all of the meanings of our Sampradaya mantras, the Gopal mantra and the Kamagayatri mantra, as so beautifully explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and to be meditating on these according to the instructions of Srila Jiva Goswami, so that we actually enter beyond the material atmosphere. And there's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam, Danur Hitasya Pranava Patanti Saram Hujivam Parameva Laksham, that the mantra acts like a bow, and we, the living entity, are like the arrow, and the target is the Supreme Lord. So in chanting our Gayatri mantras, in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the mantra should be acting as a bow, taking us, the jiva, to the lotus feet of the Lord. Not to chant our mantras ritualistically, not to chant them as something empty, not to chant them as just something to say, okay, I finished my vows. But to understand that the way we chant our mantras, the fact that we should chant them in the first place, and the way that we chant our mantras, the mood that we chant our mantras, creates the Sankirtan Yajna, which creates the sun, S-O-N, that creates the sun of succession, that creates the sun of maintenance. It's this fire of sacrifice that's creating the continuity of our movement. And if all of us engage in this fire of yajna, both in terms of our japa, in terms of our japa, our Gayatri, and our Sankirtan, we are continuing this mission that Srila Prabhupada gave us. And the more of us that do that, the more the purity will go on generation after generation. Then there is succession through initiation. So of course Srila Prabhupada here in Mayapur said he wanted how many gurus?
Millions
of gurus. Right? Prabhupada said, right? Be a guru to your wife, be a guru to your children, be a guru in your village. Go out and preach this Krishna consciousness. And he was asking everybody, not that it's just the province of a few people giving diksha on a list, but everybody. All of us should take that as our mantle, that we should preach Krishna consciousness. We should teach others. Srila Prabhupada told Yamuna, he said, if you don't teach cooking, you'll become envious. How is that? If you have some knowledge, you have some skill, and you don't give it to others, that means you want to maintain your air of superiority. But one should give to others. In fact, this is the mood of a parent. The mood of a parent is that they want their son, their daughter, to excel them. You think of the people, they didn't go to college, they work hard so their child can graduate. Yes? My son, the doctor, what are you? Oh, I am a janitor only. But my son is a doctor. So we should want to share this Krishna consciousness with others, guide others, take the responsibility to teach others and train them in this Krishna consciousness. Not simply think about ourselves. If we simply think about ourselves, we're not really in the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're not in the mood of Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada. I personally have the conviction that if we were to focus more on preaching, that people's sadhana would automatically be more enlightened. We have so many retreats and focus now, and let's have a focus on our own chanting and a focus on our own sadhana, and that's good and that's wonderful. But I know when I joined the movement, the focus was equally, if not more, on the mission. And we wanted our personal purity, not just so we could attain Krishna prema and we could dance with Krishna in the forest of Vrindavan, but so we could save the world. And one thing I really urge everyone here is think about the mission. Get a vision. Get a vision. Where are we trying to go? If we could make all of Bengal in Mahaprabhu's movement, or all of India, or wherever you're from, you know, if you're from Kenya, if you're from Slovenia, wherever you're from, What would that look like? What would people be doing? You know, we've been doing this visioning exercise with a lot of leaders in our movement. Just even the city where you live. We did this in Ljubljana. It was very nice. And also in Zagreb, in Spain. What would people be doing? What would be happening in the universities? What would be happening in science? What would be happening in religion? What would be happening in the children's schools? What would be happening in government, in the military? What would the businesses be doing? What would be happening in agriculture, in the arts, in the crafts, in the services, in the skills? How would things be going on in the world? Think about this. Where are we trying to go? I was talking with one devotee in Germany who said, oh, such and such man in London where I live, he's a billionaire, and I've been trying to tell him to use his money to start cow protection programs. And I said, how has he made his money? He said, oh, all ugra karma, all mining. And I said, Prabhu, come look at the altar. Do you see any metal? Is there any metal on the altar? Look in the devotee's prasadam. Is there any metal? I said, in a Krishna conscious society, would anybody be doing mining? He said, oh, I guess so. I said, your business isn't to tell him that his work is all nonsense maya and the only value of it is his money. Your work is to tell him how to do his mining using the principles of Varna Dharma to purify it. So get a vision for the world. Get a vision for the world. And then think, how do I want to be part of that vision? What can I do to contribute? What can I do to contribute? How can I be part of that vision? This is what it means to be guru. Being guru doesn't just mean going through some ceremony and giving somebody a name. But it means taking this knowledge of Krishna consciousness to the world. And then the last method here is biology. So we have through yajna and mantra, through preaching, and through biology. There has never been in the history of the world a religion which continued simply through adult converts. It has never happened. All of the fastest growing religions in the world are growing primarily through children. In our Hare Krishna movement, somehow we have translated our emphasis on Gyan and Vairagya to meaning don't have children. Our chances of continuing and our chances of thriving without a lot of very well-trained children are practically nil. People who talk about establishing Varnashram perhaps forget that one of the elements of ashram is young marriage and children. Now, if I say this, I'll probably never be invited to speak again. But such is the case. People should marry young, not that you get married when you're 60, which is, you know, the prevailing trend, or, you know, you stay brahmachari, stay brahmachari, stay brahmachari, oh my God, I'm 43, I gotta get married. No. Get married young and have healthy children and have a lot of children and then train them nicely, raise them nicely. Have them be part of our Krishna conscious society. One of the most wonderful things about here in Mayapur is how children are an integral part of the morning program every day. And this is something we should see in all of our temples. Srila Prabhupada said the children should be trained to do as the elders are doing. The children should be integrated into the programs of our society as early as possible. That they should have a meaningful place in our society from a very, very young age. And we shouldn't see them just as noisy and dirty, which they certainly are. That's their dharma. If they're not noisy and dirty, then they're sick. So it's not just that they're, you know, troublesome and noisy and dirty, but they are the future. They are the future. They are a succession. They are our continuity. And therefore, there's such a stress in the Bhagavatam on having children and having good children. And this means emphasis onto educational programs. A variety of educational programs for a variety of children with a variety of needs. Prabhupada wanted a school in every center. And making the education, the having of children, which means, of course, a strong grihastha ashram, the having of children, the education of children, one of the pillars of our society. And my dear friends, right now, it is not. In the 50th anniversary posters, not one of them was dedicated to the education of children. It wasn't even mentioned on the main poster. It was a sideline on the poster about charity. It wasn't one of the petals on the centennial lotus. It's been a very neglected aspect of our movement. But without having children and then taking care of the children, the possibility that our movement will continue in purity through the generations is very small. So there is tremendous emphasis throughout the Bhagavatam on this continuity, on succession, on maintenance, on everybody doing their part to continue to keep the valuable jewel that we have gotten and to pass it on through the generations. The great personalities of the Bhagavatam are very concerned about this. The Lord himself is concerned. Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON made a huge attempt to try to have things go on. And now, my dear friends, it is upon each of us. This is not just the job of the GBC. It's not just the job of somebody else. It's the job for each of us, at least in one of these three ways, and if possible, in all of them, through the fire of sacrifice, the Harinam Sankirtan Yajna, our chanting of our Gayatri mantras, through the teaching and preaching at Krishna consciousness, taking the time and energy to train people in Krishna consciousness, and if possible, to have our own children who we train nicely, so we can see our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren going on in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Yes, Prabhu.
Before you was speaking about love to Godhead, I was thinking always something kind of stopping us to get it is this material energy, Maya, or something in us. What is this stopping us?
We are stopping ourselves. He said, what is stopping us from getting love of Godhead? By the way, if you want one of my books, they're there at the table. You can get one from Mahalakshmi. We are stopping ourselves. Love of Godhead is already there. It's eternally existed in the heart. We already have it. But basically, we are resisting it. We're afraid. If I love God, I won't get what I need. I won't get what I want. Who will take care of me? How will I be the Supreme? So this is simply, our process is basically just letting go of our anartas, letting go of our anartas, and then the love of God naturally manifests. There's no external situation that can stop us from getting love of God. That's not possible. Yes?
When you are raising your children, how do you try to get them not to be in Maya?
When you're raising your children, how do you try to get them to not be in Maya? How do you protect your children from Maya? Well, that's a whole other class. So I have two main classes that I give on this. One is called The Four Keys, which you can find online, and another is called Parenting by the Gita. So both of those classes are online. I could give you like a 30-second summary. So the Four Keys are relationships of love and trust, Krishna conscious stories, having them have meaningful service from a young age, and giving them positive emotional experiences in relationship to their Krishna consciousness. Also very, very important when we talk about parenting according to the Gita is to recognize your child's nature and engage that nature in Krishna consciousness. That's a very important area. And to give them the real happiness in life, which comes from actually from yajna rather than sense gratification. And you've got to be happy in Krishna consciousness. If you're like, be happy in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't work very well. Yes?
Just a comment about the growth of the movement for having children. A good example of this is the Mormon Church in America. So statistics show that So Mormon Church in America, they have a, for the last century, they had a growth rate of 4% per year. And as an example of how a movement like that can grow at 4% growth rate per year, which means they're having about 4.5 children, you know, average.
Right.
Plus the preaching also.
Yes.
25% of the new members come from preaching, 75%.
75% from children.
And so at a 4% growth rate, they went from 1950 to having 1 million members to 65 years later in 2015 having more than 15 million members.
Yes. Yes. I, if you think about it, there's been a lot of discussion, ISKCON, that the majority of our growth is coming from people who are ethnically Indian. The vast majority of our growth. That's almost like children. Because the ethnic Indian are being, they're raised more or less from childhood in similar principles. So we may think of them as converts, but they're actually a lot closer to children. Now, what's happening among people who are ethnically Indian is, first of all, they're starting to have fewer and fewer and fewer children. Indian families now are having just one child, maybe two. They're also stopping to raise their children in the culture as much. People being born in ethnic Indian families now, you know, especially in the cities, or if they're born out of India, they're not so much being trained in the culture. So that well's drying up for us. And we should really think about this very carefully, that this reliance on ethnic Indians all over the world as our main source of growth is not something we can really depend on. It may appear to us that that's converts, but it's not exactly. It's almost like people born into the movement. It's a sticky thing. Yes, thank you. Anybody else? We have time for one more. Yes, Nahari.
You mentioned about how few religions make it beyond
100 years, yes.
Make it beyond 100 years.
Practically none. It's on.
Okay. And, yeah, the figure that we heard at the SGGS meeting 2 years ago was 0.1%.
Wow, 0.1% of religions make it past 100 years.
So when we look at those that have made it, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, we notice that they're all, every one of them without exception, has branched off and become fragmented.
Yes.
How do we stop that this time? Because it seems like we're on that.
You can't stop it. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj describes the Lord Chaitanya tree, and it wasn't a palm tree. It wasn't a single trunk. Prabhupada said that a tree is beautiful if it has many branches, just make sure all the fruit tastes the same. If you're trying to stop branching, you're trying to stop the natural, biological way that things spread most efficiently. If you want to spread resources most efficiently, you do it through branching. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a tree. Srila Prabhupada was trying to establish that ISKCON is a bona fide branch.
Trunk.
No. No.
Branch.
Prabhupada was trying to establish in Chaitanya Charitamrita that we are a bona fide branch of the Sri Chaitanya tree. We're not trying to be the trunk. That position's already taken. We're not opposed to branching. We want branching. Prabhupada told one disciple in the 70s who wanted to start his own society, he said, yes, the tree is beautiful if it has many branches, but make sure the fruit tastes the same. If we're going to spread all over the world, Prabhupada talked about spreading all over the universe. I have no idea what Prabhupada was talking about when he said spreading all over the universe. I haven't a clue. Spaceships, anyone? Mystic travel, I have no idea. But at least on the world, we're going to be doing that through branching. That's how it's done. That's how it works. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai.